The Idaho Observer is one.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Peter Mac Show here on www.republicbroadcasting.org. Again, I want to thank John Stattmiller for giving me the chance to move my show from where it previously was, KCXL in Liberty, Missouri, to the republicbroadcasting.org website, and just to continue to spread this information about individual rights as exemplified in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, as I've done for some 5 years now, and always open to being corrected if I misstate law or something else. I want to talk really today about the federal income tax, today being April 14th. I just got back from driving to the post office and mailed my income tax form in, paying money that I don't believe I owe, but nonetheless to keep myself from being prosecuted or otherwise hassled by the infamous IRS, I comply with their wishes. I want to talk a bit about the a previous show today between Larkin Rose, who was my first guest, my guest last week, and his wife Tessa. Larkin debated a fellow named Jonathan Siegel, a professor of law at George Washington University, on another website today. It's called Get on Your Soapbox. I believe it was the first airing of that show. Excuse me. sorry. Jonathan Siegel, as I said, is a professor of law at George Washington University, a graduate of Harvard, a graduate of law, Yale Law School. And Larkin, of course, comes to the debate with the position that if you look at the law itself very carefully, it does not show that the income of the average American is subject to federal income tax. And Siegel, of course, took the opposite position. Now, what was interesting to me was how the debate actually opened. Larkin presented his synopsis of his side, and you can listen to the archives from last week to get a little better understanding of it. He is also going to, he said, shortly make his report taxable income available for free again. At this point, I believe he said it will be available at www.861.info. And I know he has revised that report a little bit, not in terms of changing the content, but in terms of trying to make it more readable. And so that report, of course, will be for available for free on the web at that site when he gets it put up there. I haven't looked recently. But Larkin came on and presented his side that, of course, most Americans don't owe federal income tax when one looks at the law very carefully, particularly Section 861 and the related regulations beginning at 1.861 in the CFR. And then Professor Siegel came on, and he began his talk by saying essentially, quote, this isn't a subject open to reasonable debate. Now, I thought that was very interesting. Of course, the very fact that he agreed to appear would suggest that he's open to a debate, a reasonable debate. And he, in fact, to some degree debated in there, but not to any extent genuinely, in my view. It's very interesting, ladies and gentlemen. Here we have a professor of law from a relatively pretty prestigious university, George Washington University Law School. And my sense of the essence of his argument was basically hearsay. In other words, he said, this isn't even open to debate. I mean, it's so obvious that everybody, with few exceptions, owes the federal income tax that there's nothing really to discuss. Over basically 100 years, he said, the judges have ruled against all these various quote-unquote tax protester theories and so forth. And there are many attorneys out there that are very eager to sue the government. Well, looks like we're due for our first break, so stay with me. I'll be right back with the Peter Mac Show.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com. Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. Report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11th. Careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
Okay. I didn't know if that was... Welcome back to the People Show. Thanks for tuning in to www.rebroadcasting.org. As I was saying before the break, I was discussing the debate between Larkin Rose and Professor Siegel, and Siegel began his side by basically saying there's really nothing to debate for virtually 100 years. Judges have ruled against these tax protester theories, and he went on to say that there are so many attorneys out there that love to sue the government at the hat. Certainly if there were any merits to Larkin's position or others, various attorneys would be suing the government over it. He went on to say also that we have these checks and balances within the federal government, and so you have, in effect, the judiciary that check the IRS, and he said certainly these judges have a lifetime, he said, appointment, which is actually not true. The Constitution says judges shall be appointed and retain their positions for good behavior. It doesn't say for a lifetime. It sort of interpreted that. And so I came in and I called on the show and I pointed out that, in fact, at least one judge admitted that they can be influenced by the IRS. And I read this quote to him. This is from Donald R. Lord et al. Versus Alvin M. Kelly. I read it on my show last week, but I think it bears repeating. This is 240 F. Sup. 87, 1965, U.S. District Court in the District of Massachusetts. And it says, quote, "More than once, the judges of a court have been indirectly reminded that they personally are taxpayers. No sophisticated person is unaware that even in this very Commonwealth, the Internal Revenue Service has been in possession of facts with respect to public officials, which it has put or shelved in order to serve what can only be called political ends, be they high or low. And a judge who knows the score is aware that every time his decisions offend the Internal Revenue Service, he is inviting close inspections of his own returns. But I suppose no one familiar with this court believes that intimidation, direct or indirect, is effective," unquote. And, of course, Mr. Siegel said, well, okay, there probably are some judges that are somewhat intimidated by it, but he cited the last sentence that I read there, that even that court is not intimidated, although the court read a paragraph stating that the IRS uses information to influence public officials. And then he went on to say that the courts rule against the IRS all the time in various cases. And I didn't get a chance to respond to that, but I thought, like many of his comments, that was an absurd comparison, because to say that the IRS rules against individual taxpayers in certain cases is certainly true, or even certain corporations. They may rule in favor of corporations or maybe even class action suits. That is literally, literally, ladies and gentlemen, less than 1/100,000,000th of the impact it would have a federal court were to rule that what Larkin Rose is stating is correct. It would be the end of the federal income tax. So to compare that and make the claim that there are, in fact, objective, honest judges out there, and here's the evidence for that, and therefore they're not unduly influenced by political pressure or pressure from the IRS, I thought was an absurd claim. Again, the essence of his argument seemed to be hearsay. No one, you know, all these reputable people that know about the federal income tax say that these theories are absurd, therefore they must be absurd. He never really countered Larkin's statements of citations of law with anything specific, but rather referred people to his website. And I do agree with him that it is a complex argument, and I will peruse his website more thoroughly. I have seen what Larkin has written in rebuttal to it, but essentially, if I understand his argument correctly, he says that no, 861 is simply for determining international income, and he cited a case if a person had income in one country and owned stock in another country and, say, had a bank account in a third country, then the determination of that person's taxable income could be quite complex, implying you don't use that section unless, in fact, you fall into the case of having that kind of situation. And then he pointed out, I believe it's section 1.1 that says the tax is imposed on all citizens on income, whether from within or without. And then Larkin responded, and I think this was his response, but if not, it's a relevant one to that. So, you know, here Siegel is laying out this general claim that Americans are taxable on all their income, whether from inside or outside the United States, which he claims was worldwide income. I mean, he claimed that the law says they're taxable on their worldwide income. And then another caller pointed out, of course, that the law does not say that. Nowhere have I ever seen the law says that an American citizen is taxable on his worldwide income. Siegel just made that inference incorrectly, I believe. Larkin countered with this quote. This is 26 CFR 1.863, quote, "The taxpayer's taxable income from sources within or without the United States will be determined under the rules of section 1.861-8 through 1.861-14T for determining taxable income from sources within the United States," unquote. So it would seem pretty clear that that's the section to use to determine your taxable income, whether it be from sources within or without the United States, or logically both, if you have income from both. And this really is the crux of the debate, I think, ladies and gentlemen. When I had
A. James Lynn on my show a little over 2 years ago, March 25th, 2005. Really, the crux of the debate is whether we use those sections. And the other side, Siegel and Lynn, and I'm sure a host of other quote-unquote tax professionals would say, you don't use those sections unless these specific conditions apply to you. But as Larkin, I think, correctly pointed out, there nowhere in the code that I have seen, nowhere, absolutely nowhere, and I'm happy to be corrected, does it say that the taxpayer's taxable income from sources within or without the United States will be determined under the rules of Section 1.861-8 through 1.861-14T only under these specific conditions. Nowhere does it say that. Nowhere does it qualify taxpayer or limit the taxpayer in any way in terms of whether he uses those sections. It simply states the taxpayer's taxable income from sources within or without will be determined by these rules. So then if, unless there's some mitigating circumstances to that phrase, and I've never seen one, then that's what you use. And then the only question is, what do they show to be taxable? And I think even A. James Lynn agreed that they don't show the average American's income to be taxable. So, again, it's a complex argument. It's hard to follow, certainly on the radio if you're new to the issue. There are a lot of other quote-unquote theories out there. But Larkin's position is, I'll simply look at the law. Another attack that Siegel made, a more or less ad hominem attack, was to say, well, Larkin, you were convicted, you went to court, you presented your argument, the jury found you guilty, therefore you must be wrong. And of course, Larkin quickly pointed out how absurd that position is by saying that Galileo was prosecuted, if you will, by the church, the Catholic Church, for claiming that the earth got sun instead of the sun around the earth. Therefore, it's absurd to claim that because someone was prosecuted, they're therefore wrong. But nonetheless, you have this esteemed law professor, in effect, making that argument. Larkin also pointed out that in his trial, he was not allowed to present his video, Theft by Deception, his report, Taxable Income, or numerous law citations. He was allowed to present some, but not many. He was not allowed to present a host of evidence. He was not allowed to present correspondence between himself and the IRS for numerous meetings that took place before they raided his home to show that he had, in fact, honestly, openly asked very, you know, pertinent questions to how one determines one's taxable income. And, of course, the IRS never came back and said, no, you don't use those because of these laws. They just said, we don't think you use those. Never supported their position with anything substantive. So he pointed out really how absurd that was for Siegel to claim that because he was convicted, he therefore must be wrong. You can see that rather quickly, too. Why would we even have an appeal process if once a person's convicted of a crime, it's assumed that that's meant he's automatically guilty? So I was really hopeful that Siegel would present something more substantive on his side to combat Larkin, but not surprisingly, he really didn't have much of substance. And it's kind of amazing that a professor of law would get on a show like this and not have anything more substantive to say. I hope they archive that show. I don't know if they did. The show is at www.getonyoursoapbox.com, and I certainly hope that they archive that so you can go listen to that show and judge for yourself whether you think Siegel presented a substantive counter or rebuttal to Larkin's position. But I don't have a guest on my pro today. I was busy during the week and wanted to get somebody of the stature of Joe Bannister to come on, this being the last day before your income tax return is due if you're supposed to pay one. And again, I don't think most are. Before I get off on the discussion of Siegel and Larkin's debate, also said that it was a it sort of chided Larkin for the fact that he had presented this position and had gone to jail, and that was wrong by encouraging people to, you know, do this. And Larkin said, look, I don't tell anybody to do anything. I present the information. In fact, I tell them that it's dangerous to take this road. You know, if they think they owe, to go ahead and file, to follow the advice of the majority, you know, the camp that Siegel clearly stands in, along with, you know, certainly millions of other so-called tax professionals. So, again, Siegel was just disingenuous, I think, in many, many cases. And you can certainly come to the conclusion that I'm biased, being a friend and supporter of Larkin Rose. And so I would encourage you to listen to the debate yourself between Professor Siegel and Larkin Rose if, in fact, getonyoursoapbox.com will archive it. If not, I guess you're sort of stuck with my, quote-unquote, biased opinion. It's interesting too. You know, Larkin presented the claim that the average American is not liable to the federal income tax, and therefore doesn't have to file. And the only sections which show you to be liable are those which show the taxes imposed if you're engaged basically in international or foreign trade. And of course, Siegel and the others have poo-pooed this. The courts and the IRS have called the statement frivolous for at least 6 or 7 years now, if not longer. But if you go to the 2006 1040 Forms and Instruction, and you turn to page 22, in the upper left-hand corner, the broad heading is income, and then the heading immediately under that is foreign source income. And it says, quote, you must report unearned income, such as interest, dividends, and pensions from sources outside the United States, unless exempt by law or tax treaty. You must also report earned income, such as wages and tips, from sources outside the United States. If you worked abroad, you may be able to exclude part or all of your earned income. Now, the interesting thing is, when one reads down beyond that, there's no other parallel section, if you will, called income within the United States. Well, stay with us. We'll be back here at the republicbroadcasting.network.org in just a moment.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's premier for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit CoreDocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 25 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming, the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee? How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017. Or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in here to the Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. And I'm your host, Peter McCandless. This is my second show. I'm doing this one solo. So if you have thoughts on what I've been saying on the federal income tax, something substantive to say about it, particularly if you heard the debate between Larkin and Professor Siegel about 2 hours ago, I would welcome a call and comments on what I said about it. You can call in here at 1-800-313-9443. Just prior to the break, I was discussing the fact that Larkin's position, and which I agree with, of course, is that the income tax laws do not show people, Americans living and working in the United States, to be subject to any federal income tax, unless, of course, they're engaged in international or foreign trade. And I was pointing out that the instruction booklet itself, and it has for at least since I've been looking at this issue, at least 7 years, stated has a broad heading called income and then a subheading called foreign source income. There is no parallel heading for domestic income. And you think that after 6 or 7 years of a number of people, following Larkin, reading this, coming to the same conclusions by reading this stuff, not because Larkin stated it, as he pointed out, that the government would simply go in into their instruction booklet and add a word. So instead of simply saying you must report unearned income such as interest, dividends, and pensions from sources outside the United States, they could simply add the as well as domestic income. But in 7 years of following this argument, or at least six for me, they've never done that. Why don't they just go in and do that? Getting back to Siegel, of course, he said that it's no-brainer. All these judges have ruled against claims like Lars, which means nothing because there are a number of wrong theories out there. In fact, there could be an infinite number of incorrect theories. I mean, anybody could postulate an infinite theories that make an internal combustion engine move. I mean, so what would that prove? That there are a host of incorrect theories that prove nothing. That doesn't prove that any one particular theory is incorrect by the number of incorrect ones, which Siegel seemed to somewhat imply. Let me give you a couple quotes, number of quotes from a very interesting article called A Monument of Deficient Wisdom. It's written by a fellow named Daniel Pila, P-I-L-L-A. It's policy report number 165 from something called the Institute for Policy Innovation. And I believe if you just go into Google and look for Institute for Policy Innovation and type in Pila, you can pull up this report. It appeared in December of 2001. Pila has a number of interesting quotes. Now, he doesn't reach the conclusion that Larkin and others have, but he does point out how complex the code is. Now, I'm sure somebody like Siegel would say, well, yeah, the code is very complex, but that doesn't mean that most people don't owe the federal tax. But if the code is that complex, then it obviously begs the question, well, where exactly does it show us liable? Can't we find it? Can't it just state it plain and simply? Shirley Peterson was the IRS commissioner back in 1992, and she testified before Congress saying, quote, the law is now so complex that it affects taxpayers' ability to comply and often affects their willingness to comply as well. A good part of what we now call noncompliance with the tax law is caused by taxpayers who have understanding of what is required in the first place. Many taxpayers fail to comply because they are unaware of the requirements of the law or because they cannot easily understand what they are supposed to do, unquote. That was Shirley Peterson, the former commissioner of the IRS. Now, you would think, having made that claim, that statement back in 92, the government, in response to the literally thousands, if not tens of thousands of questions, do we use these sections of law to determine our taxable income, would figure out how to say that, would respond very quickly. But, of course, they've never done that. Looks like the taxpayer advocacy reported that in 2000, it said, quote, complexity remains the number one problem facing taxpayers and is the root cause of many the other problems on the top 20 list. Despite IRS restructuring to target services to taxpayer needs, the fact remains that the Internal Revenue Code is riddled with complexities that often defy explanation. And yet here we are asking people if we use these particular sections of law to determine our taxable income. And if you ask H.R. Block, as I have, they won't answer you. If you ask your congresspeople, they won't answer you. I've asked Sam Graves here in the 6th District of Missouri for years to answer questions that Larkin has posed. They won't do so. And yet they admit that this is a horribly complex document. And, of course, Siegel and others say, yeah, but maybe complex, but you owe. Well, it's not quite that simple, Mr. Siegel, because if you go to the Murphy case, which was concluded last August, I believe, what you see is that, in fact, what you see that the government, in that case, the court found that in the case of Murphy, who had received some compensation for some kind of injury, I'm not sure whether it's mental or physical, that did not fall under the meaning of income within the 16th Amendment. And so it's interesting that somebody like Siegel is not aware of this. I realize tax law may not be his particular area, but he agreed to come on the show and debate Larkin. And so it's clear that that case, and I'm sure the IRS will appeal it, that case has opened Pandora's box for the IRS, because if, in fact, certain received income, in this case for compensation, do not fall under the meaning of income within the 16th Amendment, then that opens up the question of just how exactly do we define, how will the courts define income within the meaning of the 16th Amendment? And I'm sure this is going to be a problem for the IRS down the road, because then other people can say, well, what about this? What about that? And so it's clearly not as simple as cut and dried as Mr. Siegel would have us believe. Now, in addition to the commissioners claiming that the law is complex and so forth, you have, let me go on. Some other commissioners, Commissioner Rosati, who was the commissioner before Mark Everson, stated the following. He said, quote, fundamentally, we are attempting the impossible. We are expecting employees in our management to be trained in areas that are far too broad to ever succeed, and our manuals and training courses are therefore unmanageable in scope and complexity. I think I read you quotes from last time showing that the IRS, by their own admission, makes errors in at least a third of the time. It gives incorrect responses to questions. Then there was a Linda D. Willis with the General Accounting Office, who testified before the House Subcommittee on IRS Oversight in 94. And she said, quote, the complexity of the code has a direct impact on IRS ability to administer the code. The volume and complexity of information in the code make it difficult for IRS to ensure that its tax auditors are knowledgeable about the tax code and that their knowledge is current. Okay, so we have the admission that both the code is too complex for the layman to understand, and it's even too complex for the IRS to administer. And we have court cases showing that not everything that comes in necessarily is within the meaning of the 16th Amendment. We have Larkin pointing out particular sections of law that show income to be taxable to Americans only when it comes from particular international and foreign sources. And then Siegel gets on and says, no, that's not true, because you would have all these other cases, and the judges would rule against it if that were the case, or at least some judges would. I think his position there is absurd. The Supreme Court, in the case of Conley v. General Construction Company, ruled the following. Now think about this with respect to the entire federal income tax code. I mean, even if you're not clear, okay, here's Larkin's business. Time for another break, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back shortly.
Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com. Call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $250 million of credit card debt and still count and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integridebtoptions.com.
The Republic Broadcasting Network is very proud to present a new educational tool that will inform and update our listeners to the most critically important topics and issues of the day. This new 50 CD collection contains valuable information carefully selected from the very best shows in the RBN archives. These standard format CDs have been painstakingly edited to remove all commercials and unrelated topic content. Each CD has been divided into multiple tracks for ease of use and review in any standard CD player. Each CD targets a specific subject matter, for example, Agenda 21, vaccinations, 9/11, depleted uranium, the war in Iraq, fluoride, deception in the churches, genetically modified foods, animal RFID tags, and many more topics. We encourage you to make copies and get them out to as many people you can. Call and order your library CDs for the price of $150, 800-724-2719, or go to the website rbnlive.com.
Stay connected to what's happening at the Republic Broadcasting Network by visiting our website,
www.rbnlive.com.
At rbnlive.com, you'll stay up to date with our latest broadcast schedule, learn about upcoming events, read about our air personalities and the programs they host, take part in discussion forums, read the latest breaking news, and listen to RBN programs on your computer by connecting to our live broadcast stream. Plus, you can download previous RBN programs from the archive completely free of charge.
Yeehaw!
That's right. Like other services, there is no charge to download programs from the RBN archive. Share them freely with others who are not yet listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network and help spread the word. We're taking America back through the power of information. Stay connected to the Republic Broadcasting Network and our website, rbnlive.com.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in to the Republic Broadcasting Network, and in particular to my show, the Peter Mac Show. Well, I just got an email from a fellow named Mike who refers to himself as a real American, and Mike says, quote, "How odd you are. You admit on national radio that you don't owe an income tax and also admit you are a coward for not standing up for your beliefs. I suggest you go to a mirror and see if you can look you in the eyes. It's people like you that are supporting a corrupt government and are funding the enemy, both foreign and domestic. I am of the opinion that you should not be a talk show host. Be a small man and resign your position or do the right thing and stop paying, illegally enforced tax. The income tax is not illegal. It simply does not apply to the average working man's wages. A real American Mike." Well, Mike, I never said the income tax was illegal, and I don't think by paying it I'm being a coward, because I would quickly be prosecuted, having been at the forefront of this, talking about it for 6 years. And I think, as I said in my email to you, I can be a lot more effective by alerting to people to what the facts are within the law and within rulings and so forth than I can by using all of my energies to fight an agency which, you know, has infinitely more money and resources and guns to attack me than I have to defend myself against them. So I do believe I'm doing the right thing by talking about it on the air, and I do believe I'm doing the right thing by sending them the money that they claim I owe, even though I know I don't owe it, so that I can alert people like you and others to what is going on. But I do want your comments, and if somebody else wants to come in who agrees or disagrees with a real American Mike, you can certainly call me or send me an email at peter@petermacshow.com. You can call in on the request line at 1-800-313-9443. Just prior to the break, I was about to read a Supreme Court citation from the case Conley v. General Construction Company, and I'd have to look in the references in the back of the report to find it. It's in the report I've been reading from here the last few minutes, A Monument of Deficient Wisdom by Daniel P. The Constitutional Conflict in Federal Income Tax Law Enforcement. Again, I don't believe the income tax is illegal or unconstitutional. I just believe it's being incorrectly and deliberately enforced incorrectly by mostly by IRS agents who simply are paid to do what they're told, much like the guards at Nuremberg, don't really care about the complexity, want to get their paycheck, and are quite happy to subject Americans to all kinds of distress and so forth to retain their job. Anyway, back to this Supreme Court ruling, Conley v. General Construction Company. Now think about this quote in the context of the entire federal tax code, the Title 26, the Internal Revenue Code. It says, quote, "A statute which either forbids or requires the doing of an act in terms so vague that men of common intelligence must necessarily guess at its meaning and differ to its application violates the first essential of due process of law." Well, in my opinion, ladies and gentlemen, that means that the entire Internal Revenue Code violates the first element of due process of law, that is, that it be understandable to people of common intelligence. And I think one can say that it's anything but that. One of the commissioners of the IRS, a fellow named T. Coleman Andrews, several years ago, in fact, in the 50s, and an interview took place with him, and he was interviewed by U.S. News and World Report on actually the day I was born, May 25th, 1956. And this was shortly after he had left that position, I believe. And it's interesting that Coleman or Mr. Andrews, T. Coleman Andrews, believes the tax is right. Now, the income tax rates in that period were, let's see if I have them in here, were extraordinarily high. And I will get to those in just a moment. But I want to read you this quote from T. Coleman Andrews, former commissioner of the IRS. It goes like this. A question is put to him by U.S. News and World Report, quote, "Don't all taxes have to come out of income unless you're going to confiscate property? The only question then is whether you use income itself as a measure of tax liability. If you don't, about all you can do is base it on transactions. Is that essentially a correct conclusion? If you don't use income as a method of measure, then transactions have to be used?" Coleman's answer, quote, "Not necessarily. We're confiscating property now. That's one of the reasons I don't like the income tax." Now, listen to this. "As I said a while ago, every time we talk about these taxes, we get around to the idea of from each according to his capacity and each according to his needs. That's socialism. It's written into the Communist Manifesto. Maybe we ought to see that every person who gets a tax return receives a copy of the Communist Manifesto with it so that he can see what's happening to him," unquote. It would be nice if we had a commissioner nowadays that was that honest about the federal income tax, but they probably wouldn't get appointed to it. So here are the tax rates apparently at that time, taxable income. now, this is back in the 50s, of course. The government will take in taxes according to this chart. This is on page 67 of this U.S. News and World Report, May 25th, 1956, the title of which is "The Income: Why the Income Tax is Bad." A little chart here called "Here are the taxes people pay in U.S. For a single person under $2,000, 20 cents out of each dollar. That's 20%. 20%. Think about that. Let's say you get up to 50,000, 50 to 60,000. I'm just selecting a few out of here. 50 to 60,000. Okay, the tax bracket. Now this is that's a lot of money in 1956. Clearly, 50 to 60,000, 75 cents out of each $1. Now get this: above $200,000 in 1956 for a single person, the government would take 91 cents of each dollar. So if you made more than 200,000, the amount of money you made above $200,000, they'd take 91% of it. Now, one of the callers that called into the debate between Larkin and Professor Siegel said that, well, really isn't paying an income tax a form of slavery, and, you know, we got rid of that 150 years ago or more, and slavery is clearly wrong, immoral, and isn't this a form of it? And he said, well, no, it's not really slavery, because in slavery, a person was required to do a particular job. And with the income tax, a person is free to do any job they want. They simply have to pay taxes on it. So if I understand Mr. Siegel correctly, if I understand him correctly, as long as the government gives you the freedom to whatever avocation you want, in other words, they don't prohibit you from entering into a particular avocation, particular line of work, then you're not a slave and they can take whatever money they want. Because, of course, we didn't get into this with Siegel, but what would be the limits to what the government could take? And I think it's easy to see that no principle, there is no principle that would say you could take X percent of a person's income, but you cannot take X plus 1%. The amount that they take, for example, from the table I just read, is completely arbitrary. They take whatever Congress decides to take. And so to claim that you're not a slave because the government doesn't tell you where you have to work or what form or what line of work you're in, I think is another disingenuous argument by Professor Siegel. I would love to be in his class at George Washington University and ask him some very pointed questions in front of what I'm sure are very bright law students there. Very interesting, very interesting. Now, many of these quotes I'm reading to you I've read on previous shows of mine when I was on KCXL and so forth, but I think they bear repeating this again, being the 14th of April. If you delve into the tax code, I think, and you particularly look at the many Supreme Court decisions, some of which I read last week, you can see that federal income tax is an excise tax. Constitution permits the federal government to impose two kinds of taxes, basically a direct tax, which has to be apportioned, or an indirect tax, which must be uniform. There are a number of Supreme Court decisions on that. Maybe I'll just read a couple of these here. Again, I can email these to you if you want to see any of them. This is from Bruchaber versus Union Pacific, 1916. Excuse me. We are of the excuse me. Frog in my throat today. Quote, we are of the opinion, however, that the confusion is not inherent, but rather arises from the conclusion that the 16th Amendment provides for a hitherto unknown power of taxation, that is, the power to levy an income tax, which, although direct, should not be subject to regulation of apportionment applicable to all other direct taxes. And the far-reaching effect of this erroneous assumption will be made clear by contentions advanced in argument to support it. Goes on to say, quote, but it clearly results that the provisions and contentions under it, if acceded to, would cause one provision of the Constitution to destroy another. That is, they would result in bringing the provisions of the amendment exempting a direct tax from apportionment into irreconcilable conflict with the general requirement that all direct taxes be apportioned, unquote. That's Bruchaber versus Union Pacific Railroad, 40 U.S. 1, 1916. Southern Pacific versus Lowe, 238 F47, 1918, said the following, quote, the provisions of the 16th Amendment conferred no new power of taxation, but simply prohibited the complete and plenary power of income taxation possessed by Congress from the beginning from being taken out of the category of indirect taxation to which it inherently belonged, unquote. Peck versus Lowe. Larkin cited this in the movie Record Freedom to Fascism. Quote, the 16th Amendment, although referred to in argument, has no real bearing and may be put out of view. As pointed out in recent decisions, it does not extend the taxing power to new or accepted subjects. It merely removes all occasion which might otherwise exist for an apportionment among the states of taxes laid on income, whether it be derived from one source or another. One more. This is Wright versus Wright, United States 302, U.S. 583, 607, 1938. From whatever source derived, as it is written in the 16th Amendment, does not mean from whatever source derived. Now, that's an interesting statement, isn't it? Okay, so the Supreme Court, in numerous cases from 1916 up to the early 20s, ruled, I think, irrefutably, conclusively, that the federal income tax is not a direct tax, but an indirect tax. So I have more to say on that when we get back. Stay with us.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutant in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 3 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-288-8822 or visit our Cardivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows over Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. We're just about to wrap up the first hour. Again, if you want to call into the show, you can call in on, let me pull up the number here. Let's see, 1-800-313-9443. And give me your thoughts on anything I've been saying today or in general on the federal income tax. I just read you a number of Supreme Court decisions which showed irrefutably that the federal income tax is an excise tax. In other words, the government did not gain the power, as is often claimed, and what frankly appears to be the case when you just read the 16th Amendment at first hand, that the government got a third power, that is to impose a direct tax that doesn't have to be apportioned, because that's what the federal income tax feels like. I mean, everybody feels like, okay, I made this amount of money, therefore I have to pay this sum of money. You know, the tax is on your income. We use the word income tax. The tax is imposed on taxable income and so forth. But the Supreme Court decisions, none of which have ever been overturned, to the best of my knowledge, all state that no, federal government didn't get any new taxing powers. And the income tax is inherently an indirect tax. Now, this quote from the Congressional Record buttresses that claim. This is the Congressional Record, Volume 89, Part 2, Proceedings and Debates of the 78th Congress, March 2nd, 1943 to April 5th, 1943. So this is some 64 years old, but somebody wants to claim it's out of date. Well, fine, except, of course, there have been no income tax amendments or any amendments which would alter the power of the government since the 40s. Here we go. And I believe these are the words of F. Morris Hubbard, who was a legislative draftsman for the Treasury Department. On page, let's see, this must be 20, I'll find it here. Page 2580, third column, it says, quote, "The income tax is therefore not a tax on income as such. It is an excise tax with respect to certain activities and privileges which are measured by reference to the income they produce. The income is not the subject of the tax. It is the basis for determining the amount of tax." That's short enough and powerful enough. I'm going to read it again. Quote, "The income tax is therefore not a tax on income as such. It is an excise tax with respect to certain activities and privileges is measured by reference to the income which they produce. The income is not the subject of the tax. It is the basis for determining the amount of tax," unquote. Now, I think that's particularly relevant in light of the Supreme Court decisions, the many Supreme Court decisions which preceded by three decades or more, as well as Larkin Rose's report, which shows that indeed, if you're engaged in certain international or foreign trade activities, those, by the government's definition, are within their jurisdiction, international trade and so forth, certainly is within the government's jurisdiction, and therefore those are excisable activities. Those are privileges. Whether you agree with that, I don't particularly agree that those kinds of activities should be called excises, you know, above and beyond just working in the United States, but the federal government sees it that way. So within their view, within their frame of reference, those are excisable activities. So this that fits perfectly with the quote. Now contrast that with the position of the other side. For example, Professor Siegel, well, you earn money, you have to pay a tax on it. Well, if that's true, then either this quote that I just read you from the congressional record is no longer applicable, and it begs the question why, or it was incorrect to begin with. Well, it would be nice to ask Professor Siegel why such a quote appears in the congressional record. Is it incorrect nowadays? Has it always been incorrect? Why did this quote refer to certain activities and privileges which give rise to the income tax? And the tax is merely the means, the tax is measured by the amount of income, but it's not the subject of the tax. I'd be curious to have Siegel's response. Of course, in an hour-long show like that, you can only discuss so many subjects, and that's where we are. Now, just to branch off a little bit about some of those particular quotes about the federal income tax and so forth, let's venture into some other